With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I mean, just so we're clear on Faria, I like him. I think he's going to be a good pitcher who stays in the rotation for the Rays, but it's hard to envision him as sort of the quote-unquote like fantasy ace.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Hello and welcome to episode 138 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by my usual co-host, Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy team. Mike, I hope you had a great Father's Day, and to all the dads out there listening to this show, I hope everybody had a great weekend. How was your Father's Day, and how are you doing this evening?
It was good. We actually celebrated the day before because my wife's a big U2 fan, and we went to see U2 on Sunday night here in Philadelphia. So it was kind of, I'd had my celebration the day before.
What is U2? Is that the band that had their songs downloaded on everyone's iPhone and everyone was like, get that off my iPhone now?
It was an entire album, which is another old person term, and you know, everybody under the age of 40 hated it. Yeah, that was you too.
And on that note, let's dive right into the show today. We've got a really cool show on tap. We're going to talk about a number of different topics, and I think the area that we have to start off with is a piece that you wrote for Baseball Prospectus that came out, I want to say, last week. It was a fantasy freestyle.
Yeah, it was last Thursday.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that. It concerns the pitching landscape and some of the changes that let me put it this way. Home runs have surged since the second half of 2015. Offense has been up league-wide, but I think this year has kind of taken it to another level. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a piece that I wrote regarding Francisco Lindor. We'll do some expert fab. We'll talk about Jacob Faria, Derek Fisher, a lot of other recent call-ups, Francis Martes, and a couple other interesting names that I think fantasy owners should have on their radar. And then we'll open up the mail satchel and we'll answer some listener questions. We got like 10 questions this week, so thank you everybody in advance for sending those in. We're going to get to as many as possible here on this show. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. You should go subscribe to the site. That's the best way to support BP and support our work. I think our fantasy team is doing outstanding work this season. Mike, we have such a really great group of writers, and I'm just really excited to be a part of that group. And the content we churn out every week, I mean, I'm always impressed by that.
Yeah, we have a crack team of writers. It's not just me and George and Brett, who you'll notice is absent this week. We have a whole group or a whole team of people, and everybody on the team does a great job. Yep. I'd rattle off the names, but I don't want to leave anyone out.
You always forget that one random person, and then they send you an email like, hey, man, you forgot about me.
Yeah. Hey, asshole, why didn't you mention me? I've been writing with you for 2 years. It's like, yeah, that was a mistake. I'm sorry.
It's like that Flight of the Conchords song, and they forget about his birthday. They forgot about my...
Oh, the hurt. Is that Hurt Feelings? Yeah, that's... Yes. That's a great song. I listen to that all the time.
I'll have to put it in the show here. So subscribe today at BP. We had the first BP ballpark event last weekend. It was in Baltimore. Craig Goldstein was there. Dan Duquette answered questions. It sounded like a really great time. I was not able to attend. You know, when they do it at Fenway Park, I'll be there. But we have a couple more coming up on the slate. You can get your tickets at baseballprospectus.com. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. That's where you can check out all of our hot takes and nonsense, chicanery, tomfoolery. And what else? Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Rate, review us if you haven't done that already. That would help us out tremendously. So I think that's all the housekeeping. I'm done. I'm done with that. Let's talk about the pitching landscape, Mike. And just if you could give us the Cliff Notes version of the piece, basically what inspired you to write it, and then what some of your biggest conclusions were when you looked at some of the numbers for the piece, which is up at Baseball Prospectus right now.
Well, a lot of what I write, as our regular listeners know, spins off of valuation. And this was a trend that I had noticed last winter when I did the season end valuations. And I noticed it even more when I did valuations a couple weeks ago. Relief valuations, particularly non-closers, have really shot up. And I kind of wanted to understand why. I wanted to know if it was just a fluke or if there's something to it that's, you know, happening in the league. And, you know, what I found is that, you know, we all kind of know this from, you know, watching baseball and seeing how starting pitchers are used and how relievers are used. But what we're seeing is that relief innings have really gone up on the whole, and starter innings have plummeted. So the combination of starting pitcher innings dropping along with rising earned run averages is really impacting their value and kind of making it so that, you know, and I don't want to, you know, spoil the entire article, but it's really changing things for them in terms of how we look at their value and how we look at reliever value as well.
That's a really interesting point, because we've had this discussion on this podcast and we get questions about it all the time as it relates to fantasy owners wondering, is there a, like, a quote unquote market inefficiency to be exploited on middle relievers? And it's like, this is the point we always go back to, is it's really hard to predict who those guys are going to be. It's really hard to forecast a Brad Brock coming out of, you know, nowhere, or even like a Chris Devensky. I mean, I don't think we thought he'd be this good. You know, it's really difficult to anticipate who those guys are going to be, and there's so much turnover that I don't know if that's an area that you can exploit going forward. Like, I don't know how much predictive value there is in this type of analysis, other than that you just need to be aware of it, right?
I would mainly say yes. What I would say is, you know, and Ben Lindbergh did a piece, I think it was for The Ringer at the beginning of the year, where he talked about teams, you know, major league teams trying to take guys like Devinsky and make them into their Andrew Miller and turn them into those super relievers. And, you know, did you read that article? Like, he had a whole table of teams and relievers where that could potentially happen.
Yeah, I feel like that was the premise, where he was like, let's find every team's Andrew Miller or something along those lines.
And not every team, yeah, not every team had one. Like, no. He made that point. He said, you know, some team just didn't have a reliever who fit the dual criteria of both having the ability to pitch 90 to 100 innings, you know, and also that rubber arm where they could kind of go, like, you know, day in, day out, and you don't have to worry too much about them. But he did identify some. And, you know, what I think is that for the most part, this isn't predictive. And, you know, some of it, too, is the small sample size noise and, you know, what happens with relievers from year to year. You know, a guy throwing 70 innings can have one terrible outing, and, you know, we kind of know he goes out there, he has nothing, he gives up like four runs in an inning, and that can really skew his stats. But I would agree that for the most part, this isn't very predictive. But what you do want to look for is you want to look for how teams are using a guy like Devinsky or, you know, a guy like Brock and trying to find those pitchers preemptively. You know, a good example of somebody I hadn't even identified until Pedro Mora, who covers the Angels, and he's a good follow on Twitter. And I'm trying to find actually what.
Yeah, I interviewed him for the Effectively Wild team preview series a year ago.
Yeah,
he's a funny dude.
he's a funny dude, and he's a really good writer, and, yeah. and he writes the LA Times. And yeah, Pedro, if you're listening, I gave him a hard time on Twitter about this actually, but I agreed with him. Blake Parker, if you look at Blake Parker's numbers and how they use him, he kind of fits the usage pattern. So what you're looking for really even more than the stats is you're kind of looking for the usage pattern in these relievers. You're looking for a guy that might go 80 or 90 innings and fit in at any point in the game. The stats might not be there, but the performance definitely, obviously if the team trusts guy has the skills, it definitely will show up later on.
Yeah, like a Michael Givens is another good example of somebody who's kind of gone more than one inning at times. But I just think that there's just limited value in those guys ultimately when you try and identify them ahead of time, because the minute you think you've found someone, they get shifted to another role, or it's just really tough. So moving back towards the home run quote-unquote surge and the air ball revolution, whatever you want to call it, I think that's the most polarizing topic in the game right now. That's a fair statement, right? That this is the issue that we're all kind of looking at. It's the elephant in the room, so to speak, right?
Well,
at this point.
From a non-fantasy standpoint, I think it's polarizing. Do you want to tell it from a non-fantasy standpoint or from a fantasy standpoint? Because for fantasy, it's not a very interesting topic. And all these valuation articles I write, that's kind of the answer, which is, well, if we see a trend, we just kind of follow it. Like if you go back to the last time, there were a lot of home runs and hitting was ruling. Pedro Martinez is a guy you wanted on your team more than, like, say, Mark McGwire or Sammy Sosa, not because, Pedro was necessarily better, but because a pitcher like that was much rarer than a hitter like McGwire, even though he's the best, or Sosa. Well, and I think that's where we're going now in fantasy. So we're headed to a point now where, while Aaron Judge might be incredibly valuable, Max Scherzer might be the guy in a mixed league that you really want to have, like the guy who's throwing all these innings and is consistent, has a whip all under one, and yeah, he gives up the occasional home run, but he's just so dominant compared to the average pitcher.
Right, that was going to be my point, because we could talk about the hitting side of things all day, but I think it's more interesting from a pitching standpoint to talk about it. And like you wrote in your piece, the pitching landscape has changed. I mean, Rudy Gamble, friend of the show, he is a writer for Razzball. He tweeted out today, aggregate starting pitcher ERA. And you just look at the numbers for 2017 by month. April, it was 407. May, 459. And then June, it's 511. I mean, you'd expect that as the weather heats up. But we didn't have a month over 4-6 a year ago, all of 2016 in terms of pitcher ERA, and we've had 2 months already out of three, which is kind of crazy. I mean, we were talking about this before the show started, but Clayton Kershaw gave up 4 home runs last night, and I know there were a ton of pieces that, I think there were 2 separate pieces that came out today called Clayton Kershaw has a home run problem or something like along those lines. And
yeah, Dave Cameron of Fangraphs had I think that was his piece.
And Sullivan, I think, right?
That was the what was wrong, might have been. It was the what was wrong with his curve, what's wrong with Clayton Kershaw's curveball, or that was another one. And
yeah,
it's hard to say how much of it's Kershaw and again, how much of it is just this environment.
Right, that was going to be my point. You could focus on Kershaw on an individual level, but I think home runs, and this is going back to a Jeff Passan piece from which is now a few weeks ago, home runs are up like 40% this year, and I'm not sure what to do with pitching now, because I find myself looking at the landscape and going, in years past, I wouldn't have been as interested in trading away a stud hitter for a guy like Robbie Ray, but now I am. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So this is I'm looking now. So, like, so far this year, the league ERA is a 4.35. Heading into tonight, that's the highest since 2007, when it was a 4.47. And for a while there, we had like 4 seasons out of 5 between 2011 and 2015 where the league ERA was under 4. And it was really starting to look like pitching, particularly with the strikeout rate spiking across the board, was dominant. And the strikeout rate is still spiking. We're at 8.27 now per 9, but because of home runs and because of power you know, and whether it's because some hitters are trying to manipulate that with their launch angle, or whether because they're stronger, or whether the balls are juiced, or whatever the reason is, you know, the reason almost doesn't matter. I mean, what matters is that this is the environment. And, you know, this is kind of to, you know, not to knock the authors of those pieces, but this is where I think some analysis suffers. Like when you're trying to take a game-by-game analysis and look at a pitcher or look at a trend and say, you know, what's going on with this player, if you're not looking at the context of what's going on right now, this is a really significant shift. Like it can't be – you can't emphasize too much like how much of a shift this is. Like there's a one almost 1.3 home runs per nine, you know, heading into tonight. And, you know, I mean, to put that in context, in 2000, which was a big year for the home run, you know, it was the year before Bonds broke the record, and, you know, Bonds had a big year, Sosa had a big year. The home runs per nine that year were 1.18. I mean, we're talking about a time frame right now where everybody is hitting home runs. Like it's just it's bigger than we've ever seen. And to be honest, I never thought we'd see this. Like I thought we might see a comeback to that late 90s. I never thought we'd exceed it.
Speaking of home runs, Gary Sanchez and Cameron Maben have homered tonight, which makes me happy. But I just wanted you to know, Mike, because I'm freaking pumped about Cameron Maben. Guy's awesome. He's doing good.
He is really good. I went all the way back, by the way, to like the live ball era, which, you know, started with Ruth, and, you know, it's really amusing to see the evolution of the home run, and, you know, how long it took for it to even go over one per nine, like, you know, once.
I think the context is key. That's the one thing you always need to look at, and that's part of why I wrote the piece that I did for this week. As a way to sort of transition to our next topic. And, oh, my last thing on the home run surge was my favorite recap of it, when everyone tries to look for the cause or what's driving it, sort of the catalyst. And there's that tweet by Sam Miller, former editor-in-chief of BP, now a writer at ESPN. He said, "I find it just hard to believe that all these hitters just figured out that hitting home runs is a good thing." Like, that one always stands out to me. Everybody's like, well, it's the air ball revolution. And it's like, well, shouldn't guys have been doing this all along? I don't know. We'll see. But the piece I wrote this week, and everyone should go read Mike's piece. It's really fascinating. And Mike's valuations are up. They're updated through June 10th. And I think valuations are good to look at to kind of assess where you are as a team or on an individual player. And that was sort of the basis for the piece that I wrote this week. And Mike, I'd be interested in your thoughts on it, because I can summarize it, but I'd be interested in what you think about the piece I wrote regarding Francisco Lindor, because he's such an interesting player for me this year.
Yeah. Speaking of home runs, Austin Slater just hit a 3-run home run to give the Giants the lead over the Braves. If you're looking for that, you know, if you're the NL only owner like I am, who has a share of Austin Slater.
Austin Slater's a really good contact hitter. He's fantastic at slapping it to right. He's so good at it. He's good. He's like Raimel Tapia, but right-handed. So, yeah, I love Austin.
So
Slater.
So Lindor, it was, first of all, it's a good piece. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
You know, I liked your approach. I liked the way you kind of tackle this. You really organized. I mean, you always do this, but you really organized it well. But I didn't even realize until reading the piece, like, how dramatically, you know, Lindor's numbers had shifted on, you know, because he's hitting so many balls in the air. Like, I knew it had shifted. But I didn't realize how dramatic that was. And honestly, if you had asked me to guess like what his slugging percentage was this year or what it was relative to his career, I would have guessed it was higher. I wouldn't have guessed that it was, you know, pretty much about the same as his 2015, and that his other numbers had slipped so dramatically.
Yeah, so sort of the genesis for this piece was I have shares of Lindor all over the place, and there was at the start of the year there was a real conversation about the changes in his batted ball profile. Michael Bauman for The Ringer, he used to write at BP, he went and talked to Lindor and he said, look, you have the like one of the single biggest increases in your fly ball rate from a a year ago in 2016 to this season, he asked him straight up, are you trying to do this? And he said no. And when you watch Lindor play every night, you go, there's no way he's doing this unintentionally, like, because he's just hitting so many balls in the air. And you look at the changes in his batted ball profile, you know, from a year ago, his ground ball percentage from 2015 to 2016, his first 2 years, was 50%. It's down to 37%. His fly ball rate was 29% for his first 2 years. It's now at 44%. And I know numbers can give you sort of a popsicle headache and you hate that, but basically what he's doing is, when he's not hitting home runs, he's hitting a lot of pop-ups and shallow fly balls, and these are essentially easy outs. And I, Mike, one of the comments that I got a lot on the piece was, you know, you're reading too much into a 300 plate appearance sample and the BABIP's going to go back up. But kind of my point was, if he's going to keep doing this, he's not all of a sudden going to see a ton of BABIP regression back towards his career sort of level, established levels, and the batting average isn't coming back, right? That's my point.
I mean, it could come back a little bit, but I agree with you on the whole. And you know, with the caveat that I didn't dive into the data nearly as much as you did.
Yeah.
But just looking at what I've seen watching him, you know, if the batting average comes back, like, I could see him finishing about 275, 280. It's really – and that's if everything goes right. Like, it's really hard to, without a fundamental change in the way – in his approach again – To see him being a 300 hitter, unless there's a lot of luck at play.
Yeah. Oh, I want to address one other thing. This was a sort of a comment that I got a lot too, was, you know, Lindor can make this work. He can be successful and a really valuable fantasy asset with this batted ball profile. He just needs to hit for a ton of power to do it. You know what I mean? If you're running a fly ball rate around 50%, you better be hitting 30 or 40 home runs, right? Or making a lot of hard contact to have a decent batting average. Otherwise, you're basically, you know, I don't know, like Trevor Story or Ryan Schimpf, where you're just not going to hit for any sort of batting average. So the main point of the piece was, though, looking at from a valuation standpoint, and I used your valuations to do that, Lindor is the 7th ranked American League only shortstop in your valuations through June 10th. And I'm assuming he's probably fallen back further in the last week or two since that point. And he's outside the top 10 in mixed leagues on the ESPN Player Rater. Like, if he's not going to hit for average, he'd been over 300 the last 2 years, and he's not going to steal 20 bases, he's a less valuable fantasy player. So that was kind of the overall point of the piece. But I don't know. Lindor, man, he's frustrating if you're watching him every day. I don't like what I've seen, so I don't know. Let's. Do you want to talk about some players that we are maybe a little more excited about now?
I was going to say, before we leave Lindor, I don't have any shares of him, so I have not watched him very closely. So I probably should, but, you know, it's a bad reason not to watch players. But honestly, I have almost nobody on Cleveland anywhere, which is kind of odd.
They're a strange team.
I think some is they won last year, so a lot of the players were expensive this year, and we're kind of out of market for me.
Yeah. Oh, I just realized why my computer.
So we want to. We're gonna move to Fab now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So let's transition to expert Fab, and we'll start on the labor mix side, because there's one pitcher here that I do want to talk about, because I've written about him a bunch. I ended up writing his call up piece. I saw him in AAA like 3 weeks ago. I wrote him up for the free agent column the last couple of weeks, and that is Jacob Faria. He went for $17 in labor mixed, and I can give you my take on Faria, but Mike, as someone who maybe doesn't have as much exposure to him as I do, I'd be interested in what your take is on what Faria is doing, because he's pitched really well since being called up.
Yeah, it's funny, because I kind of punted and just agreed with most of what you said, because I haven't seen him.
Right.
You know, from what I have seen, he looks okay, but like I thought your assessment was kind of dead on. Like I thought the stuff would be better given like what, you know, he was advertised as, or what the way people are raving about him. Like I think he could be a mid-tier guy. I just don't see him necessarily as anything better than that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's not overpowering. The fastball is, you know, 92 to 3. Changeup 82 to 84. And the changeup's really good. I mean, it's a good pitch. He gets a lot of swings and misses on that. But my big concern, and this is what I wrote in his call-up and in the free agent column, was it's hard to envision him as sort of the quote-unquote like fantasy ace. I know some other podcasts, they've advertised him as, you know, legit, and this is, you know, we knew he was going to be good. And it's like, well, okay, he's going to be good if the strikeout rate translates. And I don't know if he can do that. I mean, he was striking out. I think it was over, you know, over 11 per nine, I want to say, at the minor league level the last couple of years. And you can do that when you have a good changeup and fastball. You know, there's a good gap in velocity between the two. He locates them well. But I just think, you know, he's sort of it's not an overpowering arsenal. And to be consistently successful at the major league level with that type of stuff, I just don't know if he can do that. You know what I mean?
You need to, well, I agree, and you need to be almost perfect with that kind of stuff in the majors. The other word I'd add to that, you know, and somebody, they're different pitchers and stuff than he did. But, you know, I remember Tony Cingrani. Mm. And, you know, when Cingrani was in the minors, people raved about him and there were similar compliments. And, you know, Cingrani and Faria both, Cingrani more so, but it was the idea of deception. And so when I look at Faria, it's like, okay, he's a deceptive pitcher, but we know that deception in the minors works better than it does in the majors, because, you know, major league hitters see a deceptive guy and eventually they figure out, you know, what he's doing in terms of the timing or in terms of the delivery. You know, unless you're Johnny Cueto, your deceptions, and even this year Cueto struggled, but, you know, deception is only going to take you so far.
So to recap on Faria, I mean, just so we're clear on Faria, I like him. I think he's going to be a good pitcher who stays in the rotation for the Rays, but his margin for error is just razor thin, and I think he's going to have issues with home runs. He did a little bit in the minors, so I think if he's not, if his location isn't perfect, like you talked about, Mike, I just think he's prone to getting hit, and that could be an issue for him. But, you know, I saw him a few weeks ago, and I was very impressed by what I saw. And, you know, talking to some of the other guys in that Durham rotation, you know, they really like what Faria is able to do. They kind of all look at him as the guy who was going to be successful out of that whole group there. So I think there's a lot to like, but it's hard to envision him as sort of like an ace. I mean, this is like what we talked about with Jarrell Cotton a year ago, where, you know, if he's not getting swings and misses on the changeup, I mean, he's going to give up some hard contact. So it's an interesting guy. Let's talk about Francis Martes for a minute, because I'm not a fan right now. I think the stuff is quote unquote electric, but I don't know if he can command it right now. You know, his control is, you know, lackluster would be putting it mild. I mean, his walk rate was nearly as high as his strikeout rate in AAA this year. What do you envision for Martes the rest of the year? Because Mike Fiers has started to pitch better. Joe Musgrove is healthy. They're going to get Charlie Morton back. I mean, do you envision him staying in that rotation long term?
I really doubt it.
Yeah.
I just don't see him as somebody. And I, again, you know, I know it's boring, we agree, but the potential with him is tremendous. But he was walking like close to a pattern ending in the minors.
It was bad.
You know, unless something changed with him, and I don't think it did, there's still just a considerable amount of risk. And, you know, the Astros are clearly going for it. You know, we'll get to him later, but you know, I'm a little surprised that they sent Derek Fisher down, but they're in a win now mindset. So if Martes can perform, he'll stay up. But I don't see him. You know, it looks like both Lance McCullers and Dallas Keuchel and McCullers more so. It sounds like McCullers will be back this weekend or close to it. So, you know, once those guys come back and are ready, you know, Martes is either going to the bullpen or to the minors.
Yeah, I think Martes, if you need the strikeouts, I think he'll be able to at least provide that. But, I'd rather have Brad Peacock, you know, because I know he's going to strike people out and be decent for five innings. I think there's a lot more implosion risk with a guy like Martes. And then you have the issue of him being set back down. And you touched on Derek Fisher. Why don't we – do you want to do that now or wait till later? on the
We can't wait because I picked him up on the in labor in the AL, and you know it was a pretty aggressive bid, so we can kind of talk about that in the AL.
I don't want to talk about Matt Davidson. He was picked
up. Yeah, no, we don't have to. I thought the point I made in the article, though, was interesting, and it was probably more a swipe at Joey Gallo than a praise at Davidson. But you know, it's sort of that idea that Matt Davidson has kind of done better than we thought he would, and he's kind of been like Joey Gallo without the hype, like, which isn't even good. I mean, it's a guy who strikes out a lot and hits a lot of mistake pitches for home runs. But again, to our earlier conversation, it's kind of funny. If you have power and can take advantage of what's going on right now in this environment, you can survive as a bottom of the barrel guy, and in an only league at least.
That was a very ominous way of putting it. If you can take advantage of whatever's going on right now. I like that.
There's something to that, though. Like,
I mean, Chris Taylor hit a ball that I think is still going, and like, he's not a guy who hit for a ton of power.
But you read the piece, right? Like, my point about Davidson was, I wasn't even praising him. I was just making the point that Davidson, when he was picked up initially in labor mixed, he had that like kind of ridiculous home run streak, and people were like, oh, he'll cool off. And you look at his numbers since then, it's like, well, yeah, he's dropped off, but not nearly to, it's not like he's hitting 170 in that time. Like, he's kind of dropped off to a point that's acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, if you can live with I think it's around 40% on the strikeout rate. I mean, if you can live with that.
If you're in a points league, obviously it's a whole other ball game. If you're in a points league, he's a big risk.
I keep having this conversation about sort of corner infield first baseman types. Like, Logan Morrison's the guy for me that's kind of the measuring stick now. It's like, well, what is Logan Morrison really worth? I mean, he's up there among the league leaders in home runs, but when you look at first base, like, what is he really worth? I mean, I don't know. Can you even play him, really? I don't know.
Well, don't you have to, though?
Yeah,
like, unless you're in a 10-team mixed league.
But if we were drafting right now first baseman, I mean, is he even a starter in a 12-team mixed league? Like, I mean, I don't know. He's probably a corner starter
at least.
Well, yeah, but at first base, like, things are strange right now, to say the least, on the first base front.
Well, I don't want to put you at the spot, but like, who are the 12 guys like off the top of your head that you would take over him?
Oh, you have Goldschmidt, Votto, Rizzo.
Now we got four right off the bat. We barely even like tried.
Yeah. Depends what you think of Miguel Cabrera at this point. I mean, based on track record, you have to take him over Morrison, right? I mean, even in
you
a
do,
redraft,
but is Cabrera like 100%? Like, oh, is he? You know that
back thing, right?
See, that's sort of the thing, and this is where this is kind of interesting, like in a 12-team league. So I guess you would take Zimmerman over Morrison too at this point, right? If you're talking about two guys who are kind of, you'd take Justin Bour over him. Well, would you take Bour over him? That's another question.
Okay, Justin Smoke maybe. Yonder Alonso maybe. I mean, they're right there. We're probably forgetting someone obvious. Freddie Freeman, Cody Bellinger.
Well, healthy Freeman you would take. Yeah, Bellinger I think you would take. But, yeah, I mean, I see your point. You probably could come up with 12 guys in a best case scenario for Morrison, he'd be at the bottom of those 12, and you'd have, like, an argument. Like, you'd at least be like, okay, well, maybe I could include him in the top 12, but I could also see an argument against. And, yeah, first base is much stronger this year than anyone could have imagined. Like, I'm looking at the list, I think I would still take Morrison in the top 12 just because after like there's a bit of a drop off, and there's some guys like Mark Reynolds who's still doing well but has tailed off a little bit.
I don't have the rankings up in front of me, but guys like Carlos Santana, Eric Hosmer, I think he's probably past those guys. Probably, unless you're in an OBP league with a guy like Santana. But that's sort of the point, is that we've had this renaissance for some of these older guys like the Zimmermans and Reynolds of the world, and then you have the 30-year-old sort of breakout class, which Morrison's a part of. But all of those guys are sort of interchangeable, right, at this point?
Well, here's what's interesting about Morrison. So if you go by – well, I'm looking here. Well, I have to do a filter here because I've got this on what's zero.
Crazy, what's crazy about Morrison is he's still out there in half of leagues. He's a legitimate option for me to write about in the free agent column, which is crazy for a guy who's leading the league in home runs.
Here's how Morrison's interesting. So he should be owned just about everywhere.
Yeah.
But to your point, and this is kind of intriguing, so – if you look at a filter, minimum 150 plate appearances, and you sort by, and it's not a fantasy category, but just in terms of his ability, if you sort by WOBA, he's the 16th best first baseman. Now, that includes Alex Avila, who you have put an asterisk next to because you'd use him at catcher.
I like Avila, too.
It includes Marwin Gonzalez, who you've put an asterisk to. And you have to look at playing time, too. These guys are under 200 plate appearances. But, the point remains, it's sort of Matt Adams playing regularly right now. Would you rather have Adams or Morrison? And I know it sounds funny, but argument, isn't it?
Did you see the piece today that the Braves are going to consider moving Freddie Freeman to third so they can play Matt Adams? What?
It's funny, but I started this conversation thinking that you were wrong and Morrison wasn't a top 12 guy or was a top 12 guy, but the more I look at this, the more I think you're probably right. If you're just looking at guys that are playing now, he's on the bubble at best. And that's a funny thing to say about a guy who has 21 home runs and is playing well, and again, an OBP looks a little bit different because he's getting on base at a .355 clip compared to a .246 batting average.
That's what I was going to say about the WOBA, because he's a guy who's not swinging at bad pitches. If you're going to walk him and you're not going to give him anything to hit, he'll take the free pass. You know what I mean? He's done a nice job of that.
You need him in an OBP league more than a
– Yeah.
But even so, there's just enough guys ahead of him where, everybody – ahead of him, I'd say, if you look at the top 10 or 11 guys, are justifiably ahead of him. If you look at WOBA, so Eric Thames is a guy who could look at the raw numbers at this point and look at Morrison and go, well, they're actually, which is funny, from a roto standpoint, they're actually kind of comparable now.
I mean, they're very similar hitters, really.
Thames has 20 home runs, 2 steals, and a .260 average. Morrison, 21, 1, and .246. they're really, our RBI runs are situational, but in terms of those three categories, they're really close. You wouldn't have thought that, but they are.
I like Logan Morrison. I had somebody text me about him today. I think it was Jake Devereaux, who's a writer for BP Boston, and he was asking me about Morrison, and I was like, I don't know what he's actually worth, really. I mean, the production is fantastic, and I think he's been great, but I mean, what is he really worth? I don't quite know. So first base is crazy deep, and it's something to consider. Anybody else on the mix side that we need to discuss? I mean, I don't want to talk about the Nationals bullpen and any Romero. Matt Strom is no. He got shelled by the Red Sox tonight too. So
yeah, is there anybody else? It's a Red Sox, but probably not. Since we're gonna pass on Fisher till the next section, I think we can. I mean, do we need to talk about Chapman? Probably not. And he's hurt now too, which is just. Oh, we'll do Chapman in the AL. So no, we can skip to the AL.
Okay, let's talk about Matt Chapman first, because he was the big bid. I was not aware that he was injured, although I did not follow the A's yesterday. So we're recording this on Tuesday night, so I don't know the latest on Chapman. Do you know what the injury situation is with him?
I gotta look this up. This is a weird injury. It's not he hurt him. I think it's an infection, but I have to look this up. I think it was Jane Lee on Twitter. I saw this and she was reporting it. He has a knee infection. And he's being treated with antibiotics, and he's day to day. And this is one of those weird things. It was reported Monday, but it had happened over the weekend, so people bidding on him, didn't know about it. So he's barely played as a result, obviously. And, you know, the thing I wonder, not to make an excuse, is I don't think Chapman's any great shakes, and he was striking out a lot in the minors anyway. But, you know, I do wonder a little if this was affecting his performance, you know, for the A's, you know, all 16 plate appearances of it.
Well, what's interesting about Chapman is they cut Trevor Plouffe. He's playing for another organization right now. So,
yeah.
Yeah,
Plouffe's with the Rays, and he's playing too.
Yeah. Which may cut into Logan Morrison's playing time, but hey, we're not going to go there. he has an infected cut on his knee, so it's not. I mean, it doesn't sound like it's a multi-week injury. And this
it's not serious, yeah. But it sounds like they're being really cautious. Which like he might not play this week, or he might not play till this. Like he might not play for a few days.
Well, it's like when Gary Sanchez had the groin injury, or he felt the tightness. It's like there's no benefit to then putting him back on the field for a few days.
Yeah, it looks like what they're doing is, you know, it looks like Healy's playing third, and you know they've got a. You know, they've got their alignment there where Fegley's catching a little bit and Vogt's DHing and Rosales is playing a little short. And I keep forgetting that the A's have a three-man bench right now, which is kind of funny.
Can we – do you want to talk more from a long-term standpoint with Chapman than
I think we redraft? I think we should.
Okay.
I'll start with you because I want to get your opinion on Chapman because I have my opinion, but I'm kind of curious to know what you think.
I have not thought about Matt Chapman in like 3 years, so I'm gonna need to do a little scouting the stat line here. But do you want to let me give you my take on the A's playing time situation? Because cutting Plouffe is only part of the equation here. They just have too many guys. You know, you have Franklin Barreto coming up potentially. You have Pinder, who you need to find a spot for to see if he is anything. You have Yonder Alonso, who's a free agent at the end of the year. So are you keeping Yonder Alonso? Is he going to play first base? Where does Ryan Healy play? Who's the DH? I just think there's a lot of moving parts with this whole equation, and I'm not sure how it shakes out yet. Because, I mean, Alonso's come out and said he wants to stay in Oakland. So I'd like to
But unless he takes a big discount, like I think he's going to get paid enough that they'll – I'm not even saying he's going to, you know, get some crazy contract, but I think he'll get paid enough where he'll probably walk.
Okay, so my question with Chapman then is – I mean, he had 16 home runs in the PCL this year, which is, you know, fantastic. He had 36 a year ago in the minors. I don't think the power is – you know, there's any doubts about it, but – a year ago, he struck out 173 times and batted .237. So, I mean, do you think the batting average is always going to be suspect?
Yeah.
Because it stretches Todd Frazier-ish profile.
Chapman's a weird player where he's always matched the scouting report, which is good in terms of predictability, but it's bad in the sense that you get the feeling that he is what he is and there's not much room for growth. Like, so yeah, he's a guy, he's got this nice raw power profile, and he's got a pretty clean swing. Like, it's not like he's striking out because he's herky jerky or there's a lot of noise, but he kind of swings over the top of a lot of breaking pitches. He's, you know, just everything in the profile screams like high strikeout. I just don't see that changing for him. So even if the contact profile improves from the quality of contact, I just always see him as like a 30% strikeout guy at a minimum. So yeah, it's really hard to predict him hitting better than .250, and that's like a best case scenario.
So my question is, how relevant is he in 6 months? Because power, you know, this is the context again. Power is league wide is at a level, sort of unprecedented levels. So I mean, how valuable is a guy like Chapman really? And from an only standpoint, he's going to be relevant because he's playing probably, but. I mean, how valuable is he? Is he a guy we're talking about in 6 months? Because I feel like Ryan Healy was a guy I didn't envision being good and now is really good, especially
he's
against
probably,
lefties.
Yeah, but Healy has a better batting average profile, or at least he had the, you know, he kind of exceeded that. I don't see Chapman exceeding that. So, yeah, Chapman, his defense will keep him in there, whether it's for the A's or someone else. I see him in a deep mix league like Labor or Tout as kind of a back-end corner. And that's 15 team mixed. So yeah, in like the standard mix, like in the ESPN or Yahoo leagues, he's injury replacement. I don't see him as an asset there.
He is no Justin Turner. my favorite player on the planet right now. I love that guy. He's so good. I'll take him at third base every day.
Yeah, Justin Turner is fueling my comeback in the CBS league, where like 2 weeks ago I looked like I was dead, and now I'm about 15 points out of first.
I had this conversation with someone. Do you think Turner, he's not going to bat 400, but do you think he could hit like 350 this year? Because
it's 340. I think is where he could land.
I don't know how you defend him. You know what I mean? If you're talking from a positioning standpoint, like how do you play him? Because he doesn't just pull the ball. He hits the ball everywhere. He hits it on the ground. He hits line drives. I don't know how you sort of align yourself defensively to try and take hits away from him. It's not like you can shift him. You know what I mean?
I don't know. No, I know. There isn't really a good way to. Yeah, it's not like some hitters where you have the book on them and they're swinging a certain way. Turner's like almost a throwback where he hits the ball like everywhere. Like he's a spray hitter, maybe not a spray hitter, but he just hits the ball to all fields.
I mean, he doesn't strike out either. That's the part that's crazy to me. You really, it's hard to get him out.
Yep.
And when he makes contact, it's a line drive somewhere. So that's the Jose Altuve profile right there. That's what he does. So I don't know. Derek Fisher, let's talk about him. And not the former Laker and whatever Derek Fisher is.
I kept searching for him on Google, and that's what kept coming up for me was the Derek Fisher of, you know, of basketball, and I kept getting confused.
I just remember him being the point guard on all the Kobe teams. That's what I remember about Derek Fisher. There was some chatter on social media. It was just Larry Schechter, right? Was he just kind of trolling you? Larry's Larry, but like, you know.
Well, Larry was saying it was a bad pick, and so like Brett and Scott Pianowski of Yahoo, and I think a couple other people were defending it. You know, and Scott's defense, which was nice, you know, was more we should have Scott back on, but we haven't had him on in like years. But you know, Scott's defense was, I'm sure, you know, Mike's a smart player, he knows what he's doing, which if you're listening, thanks Scott, I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean the thinking with the bid was that Fisher will be back at some point. And the other thinking of it is this is an AL only league where the week before I picked up Peter Burgos because there is nobody, and I mean nobody, on the free agent pool.
Oh yeah,
it's just such. And so the other option for me was to wait for 2 or 3 weeks or for a month for the players to come over from the NL. But we know from experience that while that could happen, we also know that it's entirely possible that there isn't a big trade, and I'm left holding the bag. And then the other complexity of that is because I've filled in with a couple guys who have actually worked, most notably Jordan Montgomery. I was already like third or fourth in fab, so there was no guarantee I'd even get somebody coming over from the other league anyway. So I looked at it like, well, Fisher is someone I can add now. You know, I'm not going to spend all my fab on him. You know, I spent a little under, like, I think I spent about 40% of what I had left, and it's kind of, yeah, you know, I mean, that's okay. And if the gamble doesn't work, the gamble doesn't work. Like, I've struggled enough on offense that I needed to kind of, like, get somebody like him.
Yeah. So I'm in the CBS AL only, and the free agent pool is just, it's a wasteland, man. Like, there's nothing out there.
CBS a little worse because it's a 7-man reserve compared to 6 for labor, but and it's the hitting in particular. Like you can usually, like, sometimes a pitcher might be sitting out there where even if he's not that good, it's like, oh, he's a good matchup, or, you know, like, maybe I'll take a chance on this guy. Like, hitters, there's usually like 5 or 6 hitters every week, and they're not even good hitters. Like, they're hitters who are like, oh my God, like, it's a bunch of backup catchers and like 3 guys.
Gary Sanchez is carrying me in that league right now. My, like, comeback to semi-relevance is fueled by Gary Sanchez power, which is kind of fun.
For me in that CBS NL, it's pretty much like Scherzer, who I took. And I picked up, like, all the Rockies pitchers, like, on the first week, and people laughed at me, and I've been streaming them, like, almost perfectly. So
you should have picked up Chris Taylor, stud Chris
Taylor. And now my offense, he's the one guy I didn't pick up. The funny thing is I picked up Utley in that league, like, when he was, like, hitting 150. And, you know, I think he's hitting about, like, 350 since I picked him up.
Utley's
weird. I fell off, but it's fun when stuff like that. See, that's the fun of an only. Like, as much as we rag on only leagues, and even I do it at this point, like, that's kind of the fun of an only, is those random things like that happen.
But you need to know the league inside and out if you're going to compete in an AL. You can't go into it and not have the knowledge of the player pool. That's the biggest takeaway I have from it.
Well, let me ask you. I was going to ask you that. So you don't have as much experience, obviously, as I do in only leagues. And, you know, CBS is like a grind because it's weekly lineups but daily moves. So, like, have you found that? Have you found, like, it's kind of tiresome? Like, you have to kind of go out there every day and, like, look and be like, I want to make sure I don't miss anybody.
I think it's more devastating when you have a lower tier player, like someone like Steve Pierce or a Brock Holt. Like if you lose a player like that to injury, it really cripples you because there's no sort of replacement level for that kind of guy.
I know.
That's the part I found a little bit frustrating. Or if you lose I bet on, this was a bad decision, but I bet on Garrett Richards, and it's like, or Charlie Morton too. And when you lose that guy for an extended period of time, you're like picking up Nick Turley and starting him and getting blasted. And it's just, there's nothing you can do. That's the part I found difficult. But I've enjoyed, I mean, I like the onlys. I wish there were more of them. It's hard to get like a home league with an only because no one wants to take the time to play at that level, you know?
Yeah, even like my long-standing home league, it gets harder and harder to find people that like not only want to play but like want to, you know, do it like year in and year out.
So enough about us. Let's talk about Derek Fisher and have a serious conversation because I like him. I think there's some power. I think there's some speed. It's I don't know if he's better than, you know, like Bradley Zimmer was a more highly regarded prospect, but I think their impact fantasy wise from a category standpoint statistically, I think could be somewhat similar, right? Because I think Brett made this point on Twitter when in the response, and you mentioned some of the tweets, but Brett said like the Astros are giving Nori Aoki like 200 plate appearances right now. Like Derek Fisher will do more with that playing time than Nori Aoki will 99% of the time, right? That's the basis for your pickup.
Yeah, and it feels to me that at some point, you know, I know Aoki's having a down year and he's been better than this, but it just feels to me that at some point the Astros are going to have to consider making the switch. You know, this isn't like the Phillies and Rhys Hoskins, who, you know, by the way, has tailed off, but, you know, has nowhere to play, or they'd have to be like, you know, and the Phillies aren't contending. And it's like, well, you know, now Tommy Joseph is hitting, we'd have to put Hoskins in left field, or Nick Williams, who's hitting. You know, I know Phillies fans, they're mad because they didn't bring him up after they cut Saunders. But it is sort of that idea with the Astros, like they are contending. And I know they have a big lead, but if you're the Astros, like you want to put on the gas and you want to get the home field advantage of the playoffs. Like you don't want to be in a position where, you know, you flounder that. So, yeah, I think at some point Fisher's going to be up. And the other possibility, which I think is less likely, they've been linked to some pitchers on the trade market. And if they decide that they're not going to bring Fisher up this year, he's an attractive trade chip.
I'm with you there. Let's also, you made the point, who else is really out there in the AL only? Like if you were, I know there's a lot of AL only talk, but like who are people waiting
Jacob
for?
Jacob Brugman and Alex Presley were the other outfielders picked up this week.
Yeah, that's not great. Okay. Town NL, there's nothing there. Let's get to the mail satchel, because if you've listened to
Town NL is kind of sad. And yeah, by the way, I'm dead in that league because of about 10 injuries. So,
and Starling Marte, right?
Talk, well, and Marte, that doesn't even include Marte.
Yeah. Let's not go there.
We'll cry about that in October when like you guys are all playing fantasy football.
Oh, is that a shot at fantasy football owners? I like it. I've been terrible in fantasy football for years. I think I came in last in a league last year, and that's a league I've won multiple times like 10 years ago. So that's not, I'm not doing so well in the football end of things. Let's answer some listener questions, Mike. You ready for this?
Yeah, fire away.
Okay. So this first question is from Joel on Twitter. He wants to know if we could talk about Addison Russell, please. He owns him in a league with Turner, I'm assuming it's Trey Turner, and Carlos Correa, just trying to justify keeping him at my middle infield spot. So Addison Russell has been someone I feel like I've gotten asked a lot about on Twitter, and I'm just completely out. I'm not interested in him. There was obviously the off the field incident, which is a very serious matter, and you know, I don't know if there's anything more you could say about it, but I don't want any part of Addison Russell. The batted ball profile, the production, I'm not interested, especially when you look at power league wide. He's not a guy who's going to hit for average or steal bases, so I just don't want him. What do you think about Addison Russell?
He's bounced back a little bit in the last like week or so, but in redraft, I agree with you. Like there's just too many, even with, you know, the possibility of a suspension, and yeah, I don't know if that'll happen or not. But even if that doesn't happen, I do kind of agree that he looks like a lower end option right now. And the other thing too is that, and I don't think anything came of this, but there have been rumors kind of swirling around him about his shoulder possibly bothering him, you know, which could explain the performance. But if that's the case, then I definitely don't want a part of him, you know, at all.
Well, let me look up here. I'm looking at the ESPN player rater because I don't have your valuations out in front of me. But let me see where he is at middle infield.
I'm sure he's really low.
Man, he is down there. I don't even... Hang on. I'm going to have to do a little bit of editing here. He's not a top 50 middle infielder right now. And that's below guys like Jose Reyes. And
that's really... I wouldn't have even guessed it was that bad. Wow.
I don't see him.
Well, to your point, a lot of that is probably the batting average.
Oh, he's 63rd, which is worse than Nick Ahmed.
That is really awful. Well, and I'm sure there's some bounce back in Russell, and this is the other problem with Russell too. So on a team like the Cubs, who you know are in win now mode, but also have a lot of depth. You could see Russell eventually start to lose some playing time. You know, he's not going to get benched completely, but you could see them like shuttle players in and out and go through different arrangements. And, you know, if that happens, if you're looking at a guy like Russell playing 75-80% of the time, he's just not worth it. Yeah, so, yeah, there's just enough bad stuff there that I don't think you – I think this year at least, you talented player long term, but this year in anything but an only, you probably want to cut your losses.
Here's a hot take. Is Addison Russell a talented player long term? Is he really? Is he?
No, I think he is.
Okay. But like Dansby Swanson, remember how a few weeks ago we were talking about how Dansby Swanson had to, you know, maybe they should consider sending him down? Dansby Swanson has a higher batting average and has basically the same numbers across the board. 6 home runs, one steal. And the same number
Dansby
of runs.
Swanson has like looked like great, and I don't know if I've been watching, but he's been looking great in the last month.
Right, that's my point. So like, Addison Russell is not good. You don't. I don't want him. I'm completely out. Let's
So wait, you're even out on him long term?
Yep, I'm done. I don't care.
Okay, well, that is, you're right. That is a hot take.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. He has a, you know, now switch over to Baseball Reference. He's got a nine, you know, a lifetime like 91 OPS plus. You know, that's, I guess it's kind of
okay,
hard.
But
for
how
to go
valuable up. Is he at shortstop? Look at shortstop.
Well,
like,
I would say to support your point. I was saying like a 91 OPS plus is bad.
Okay. Yeah.
But the funny thing is like, so on the one hand, you look at a guy like Russell and say he's only 23 years old. The other side of that, though,
that doesn't mean he's getting better, right?
Right. Well, see the other side of that is, you know, to bring up like names from the past. You know, I remember a guy from, you know, when you were like, you know, really young. You know, Royce Clayton. Royce Clayton was that guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you go back 20-25 years, Royce Clayton was a guy who, when he was really young, it's like, oh, you know, he's struggling. Or, you know, Jose Offer was another one. But, you know, Royce Clayton's struggling. He'll get better. He's young. And then, you know, you look at Royce Clayton at the end of his career, and you're like,
well,
all right, like he had a good year. He had a good year or two, but he just never got better. Like you are right that like we all assume that Russell will get better, and I still think he will. But I can concede it's possible he won't.
That's literally Freddie Freeman disease that we always talk about with Brett. You know, just because a guy's young doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get better. And I feel like I need to put the caveat in there, like from a real life standpoint, like I'd want Addison Russell to be my shortstop because he's fantastic defensively, but
right.
From a fantasy standpoint, I what does the upside really look like? How is he a mixed league really relevant kind of guy? I don't think I'm interested.
Well, I think the problem with him,
that's even all. If,
well, I think just to finish this, you know, I think the problem with Russell is that even if he, like, let's assume the best case with him in this current context, if he's like a 30 to like 30 home run guy hitting 250 who doesn't run or barely runs, you're kind of right. It's like, yeah, at that point he's a deep mix guy, and in 12 team he's kind of borderline in this context, like quite honestly. That's a really good point. You know, looking at, and again, that's contextual to kind of go back to what we're talking about at the very beginning of the show.
Isn't his ceiling like sort of what, I don't know, what Brandon Crawford kind of was doing a couple years ago now, right?
Yeah, I mean,
like,
it might,
isn't that
might
kind
be
of
a little
what the
bit,
profile is?
It might be a little better than that, but that's that's not a bad comp.
No. Okay, let's talk about some other guys we got asked about. This is from Brock Tyson. He wants to know if he can count on Gregory Polanco to be a top 40 outfielder for the rest of the season. And just you have to go down pretty, pretty far to find him on the player radar. I'm assuming he's outside the top 100 outfielders right now at this point.
Think he's that low?
Man, he is. He's been pretty brutal. I mean, J.D. Martinez is 74. So,
yeah, I mean, you know what?
Oh, 96. I was right. 96 on the player rater.
You know what? I always forget how many outfielders there are. Like, you know, there's just so many outfielders that's a large.
Like,
yeah, that's a large
okay.
Part.
But the player rater's not a great. I mean, it's not perfect. Like, you wouldn't.
It's a good.
I
mean, the player rater
you know
is.
I mean?
Yeah, but you know what? The player rater is a good like. Thumbnail.
Yeah.
Like it's something that I like to use, I think even more than my valuations. Like if I want to look at something very quickly, then I've got the player rate. And then I'm kind of like, okay, like it's something like that. So let me go back to the question about Russell. Top 40 outfielder, is that the
No for Polanco. Polanco.
I'm sorry. So for Polanco, top 40
top
outfielder.
Top 40. He's currently hitting .245 with four home runs and seven steals.
Yeah, and I know, you know, he's another one. Like I know, or I thought he had picked it up of late, but even looking at what he's done recently, I don't necessarily think that's the case.
He's been hurt, and he's having all sorts of. I guess they're calling him mechanical problems with his swing. I mean, ugh,
yeah.
I think there are better options than Greg. Like from a redraft standpoint, which is I'm assuming what Brock is asking, you can move on from Greg. If you're still holding on to him and you're competitive, like that's kind of amazing to me considering what you probably had to pay to get Polanco in a draft. So yeah, I'd be moving on. I wouldn't have a problem with that.
I think you're right too. You know, and again, it's just funny because. Polanco's another one. I was under this impression that Polanco had picked it up like the last, like recently, but his last 2 weeks, he's got like a 192, 250, 269 slash. So he has not picked it up.
All right. Next question is from Man Bear Pig. He wants us to talk about Yasmani Grandal, which is another fascinating case in player rater finish where he's currently 15th on the player rater. Can you, Mike, you don't have it up in front of you, do you? You're not cheating, right? You're not looking.
The player rater?
Yeah, you're not looking, right?
No, I don't have the player rater.
Okay. Let me see how many of the top five catchers you can guess. Go.
Alex Avila?
Yeah, you got it. He's
okay,
five.
I just would have, you know, probably guessed him. You know, it's funny. I heard someone having this conversation the other day, but I'm still going to, like, miss on some of these guys. Is Posey one of them?
Yes. He's number one.
Wow.
I mean,
okay,
he's batting like .350.
Yeah, it's the average with him that puts him up there.
He's hitting .347.
Yeah, I won't even go to like the BP page and look because, you know, even looking at TAV kind of can give you, you know, once you start looking at stats, you'll get those.
Yeah. The other three, Sal Perez, Gary Sanchez, who's played like a month, and he homered tonight
as
we're recording.
Perez. Okay.
The other one is Brian McCann.
Who's the other one?
Brian McCann.
Yeah, I would have guessed Sanchez just because there's so few catchers and he's played so well. I would not have gotten McCann and Perez, which is kind of funny because McCann and Perez are – like I think if someone not following this year had to guess catchers, they would have actually done better.
Yeah.
And they would have missed an Avila because you'd be like, well, why the hell is Alex Avila like a, you know, even a top 30 anything, let alone a top 5?
I really love what Alex Avila is doing, though.
Yeah,
I do
too.
He's really fun. The 6 through 10 on this list are crazy. Yadi Molina, JT Realmuto, Tyler Flowers – Mike Zanino, who homered, he has let me see this. In the last week, he's homered 5 times, which is nuts. Wellington Castillo is 10th. But, yeah, Yasmani Grandal is at 15. And I guess the question with Grandal is, I mean, he only has 6 home runs. And he's been pretty bad for a few weeks now. Not a lot of extra base hits.
Wow, well, the thing about Grandal that makes me nervous is that he looks like a good hitter, but it looks like he's made legitimate changes to his swing profile where he's sacrificing that power. And he's like the weird hitter who is like not going to hit for power or what everybody else is for that reason.
Yeah, but this is kind of who not Gary Sanchez. This is who Yasmani Grandal is. He's a guy who's going to have icy cold stretches, and then he's going to heat up and hit like 5 home runs in a week. You see, you can't really sit him at this point, really.
No, you can't sit him. But the funny thing about Grandal, though, is that even when he did go through a stretch this year where he was hitting, and during that stretch, he wasn't hitting for power. So, like, what I don't really know is that, you know, it looks to me like he might get hot again. Like, and I don't doubt that. I just don't know if that streak, based on what he's been doing, it is going to come, like, with this big, like upshot in power. Like, I just don't know if it is.
Yeah, that's fair. Let me pull up the next question.
He'll probably wind up with, like, he could wind up with 15 home runs. Like, and that's still decent, but I just see that as more likely than him hitting 27 again.
Oh, so Charles Murphy asks, is Mike Zunino for real? Is it worth dropping Wieters for him in a 10-team head-to-head? And, I mean, you know,
you probably can, but
yeah. Zunino, since being called back up from AAA around this time a year ago, has been really fantastic. Like, he's hitting for a ton of power. And he was doing this in Tacoma when they sent him down, and he kind of revamped his whole approach and everything while he was on his little vacation or sabbatical down at AAA. So, I mean, do you think this is sustainable, what Zunino's doing? Because I think the power is, but let me see what he's batting. He's hitting 257, which is, for Mike Zunino, like 400.
Yeah, it's really good. I just, you know, anyone with that, like, strikeout-walk ratio, it's just difficult to expect him to hit for any kind of average.
Meg Rowley's favorite player, Mike Zunino. Shout out, Meg.
Wait, who said this?
It's Mike Zunino is Meg's favorite player.
No, I know.
Yeah, it's not even close.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame her. I mean, he's going well. He's a fun player.
He's very fun. He hits balls very far.
I guess the question really with Zunino comes down to if he does slump and he has the inevitable stretch where he hits like 170 or 180, will Seattle just stick with him and then hope that the good times come again?
I mean, yeah, they have Tuffy Ghost Switch on the roster, so it's not like they have an alternative. Okay, this is a question from Max Margolis. He sends us a lot of questions, I feel like. Thanks, Max. He asks, if anyone has anything new to say about Yasiel Puig, that would be of interest. I like that he puts that in there. Like, can he hit for average, or is he just a soft grounder machine? which is great. I've had this discussion about Puig here on Twitter with some people in the past, and my point is Puig's on pace to set career highs in probably home runs and steals this year, but is he still like a good fantasy option if he's going to hit 9th for the Dodgers? And like I just don't see a ton of ceiling here. Like, if you beat me with Yasiel Puig, like, I'll tip my cap, because I just think it's kind of like a low percentage play, because there's just not huge upside here. Like, I don't see the best case scenario for Puig being.
Is he gonna keep running? Like, I'm kind of intrigued by those steals. Like, when you add it to like everything else he's doing.
Yeah, but he's never done that before. And for a guy with his injury history, like, do you really want him? This is
right,
like, sort of the Cam Maben argument. Like, do you want him running?
20 steals, is he gonna get hurt? That's a good question.
He's had hamstring problems, right? I mean, that's not.
Yeah, but he's had all sorts of leg problems.
All he has to do is all it takes is one incident, and it can knock out an entire month potentially.
And the average is low, although some of that appears to be Babbitt fueled, because like he's just putting up a Babbitt that's like nowhere near like what he's done like in the past in a negative way.
Like Yasiel Puig, from like a raw talent standpoint, there aren't like 10 guys you'd rather pick to try and, like, if you had to play one, like if I think it's the Bill Simmons thing, like the Space Jam argument, like if the aliens showed up and we needed to field the team, like I'd probably put Puig out there because he can play
insane
right field, and when he gets into one, I mean he's fantastic, but there are just so many question marks with Puig. I mean, I don't know how you can, like, he's a top 40 outfielder on the player radar right now, but I can name, you know, 20 players behind him that I'd just rather have.
That's probably true. The other thing with Puig, though, is I do feel that you have to, speaking of Grandal and his swing profile, he just hit a ground ball single up the middle, which is a lot of what I've seen from him when he's been successful. And of course, I'm burying the lead. Bellinger hit a 2-run shot, and it's already 4-0 Dodgers in the first with no outs off your boy Gesellman.
Oh, that was a cheap shot. Boo.
Do you still have him?
No, God, no. No, okay. We've been out for a while on Gesellman.
There you go. So Puig, I don't know what to think of Puig. Like, Puig is a player that coming into this year, I kind of made the point that, you know, he never had more than 19 home runs. You know, he never had more than 11 steals. Like, he's one of those players that, for all people talk about him, he only even had one season where he's played more than 104 games in the majors. Yeah. So, I guess I agree with your point on the whole, which is if Puig plays 150 games this year and hits, you know, 25 home runs and steals 15 bases and hits 260. You're right. You just have to kind of tip your cap and be like, well, you know, I got beat by the guy who capitalized on this.
Yeah. But
it's really difficult.
Oh. Joey Votto took Colomé deep, which is impressive.
Other side of this, though, is it's really difficult to cut a guy like Puig right now, too, though. Like, I know what you're saying about the guys behind him.
Mm.
But I guess the question is, like, of the guys behind
him. I wouldn't cut him, but.
Right.
I mean, you ride the streak, but you have to know that this could end at any time, right?
Oh, yeah. Well I guess that those are two different arguments. Is right. Like, okay. Would I cut him? No.
No, I wouldn't cut
him. Would I plan for a contingency where I'm going to need a replacement? Yes. Like, those are kind of the two, you know, those are the two arguments there.
Yeah. So Rudy Hessman sent this in. Can you talk about Ahmed Rosario and why the Mets hate him, please? And we touched on this on the last show when we had Stacey Gutsoulias on, which was a fun episode. I had a good time with that one. We talked a lot of Yankees stuff, but we did touch on the Rosario situation right at the top of the show. But it doesn't sound like he's coming up this year, basically, is what it sounds like.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if he does come up, I think it'll be like in September.
Yeah, but we're past Super 2, so
yeah,
if he were going to come up, it would have happened, right?
Well, what I'm starting to think with the Mets, so the Mets are back now double digits, and they're losing tonight, you know, and we're recording this on Tuesday. So they're back in the double digits in the loss column now in both the wild card and the, you know, and the NL East.
Well, the wild card's coming out of the West, right? The Diamondbacks and Rockies.
Well, here's the thing.
They're pretty much locks now, right?
Well, here's the thing about the wild card. I could see one of those teams slipping, and, you know, I could see one team out of the, not in the West, like rallying and coming back. But honestly, it's not going to be the Mets. Like, the Mets have so many injuries.
They're pitching staff dumpster fire.
Well, you know what it is? Even if all these injuries were there and Noah Syndergaard was healthy, then I might look at it like, all right, they've got an ace. You know, they've got a guy every fifth day who can win. But without him, you look at it like, yeah, the Mets are just a team that at best is a 500 team. And quite honestly, that seems generous right now. So yeah. The Mets are probably looking at it with Rosario at this point. Like, he's 21 years old. He won't even turn 22 until, and I'm saying this as someone who I really like Rosario, and I really think that he's a talented player and is somebody who could be a really great major leaguer. But from the Mets' perspective, if they're not contending, like the argument along with Rosario was Jose Reyes stinks, and he'd be better than him, or he'd be better, you know, he'd cure their defense, this, that, and the other.
Yeah, but...
Well, I just don't see the point of them calling him up to win 80 games instead of winning 75.
Right.
And that's probably generous.
Baseball is a business, and burning service time on Ahmed Rosario just so you, for the slight possibility that you make the playoffs, very slim possibility, and he'd only be, what, maybe a marginal? I mean, he'd probably be an upgrade, but how much of an upgrade are you really getting? It's not worth it to burn the service.
I think
time.
You know, the argument for bringing up Rosario at this point is it would be you'd be throwing a bone, and a pretty big bone, to the fans.
Yeah, but they've never
get
cared.
To see. What's this?
Do they really want to do that? Like,
well,
who cares?
Well, this is the other funny thing about Rosario too, which is, so right now you've got all these people like screaming that they want Rosario, and they're people who are not scouting people, like they're not like smart, like, you know, people who like follow like we have at BP or at Fangraphs or at Baseball America who know prospects. There are people who hear a beat writer say Rosario 100,000 times, and so they want to see Rosario, even though they know little about him, and they probably don't even know that, you know, his PCL numbers in Las Vegas are exaggerated. And yes. You know, by the way, his numbers have dropped off. He's down to 325 now in AAA Las Vegas, which isn't bad. But it's certainly not great. Like, it's certainly not a number where you're like, oh my God, like, that's like to put this in perspective, like, Wilmer Flores was a better hitter in the PCL at the same age than Rosario is now. And you know, don't get me wrong, Rosario has more growth, he can play defense, he's a better baseball player than Wilmer Flores. But in terms of what Rosario, the impact he can have right now, you know, we're not talking about like a Chris Bryant 2.0 coming up to the majors and helping the Mets. That's not what this is.
No. And
you know, we're talking about a good player who would help them more defensively than with the bat.
Yeah, so Gleyber Torres is out for the season. He's going to have Tommy John surgery. So exhibit 9,000 on why you don't need to stash prospects in a mixed league, because most of the time it's not going to work out. like it's very rare that you draft Carlos Correa and stash him and it works out in a redraft. Like, it's just, those are the outliers. What happened two years ago looks like such an outlier now because of all the impact guys we had that year, but we just haven't had a lot this year. Like who's been a really good impact other than Bellinger, and I don't think Aaron Judge counts, but other than Cody Bellinger, who's really come up and made a huge impact?
It's really just been Bellinger. And you're right, that's more common. It's usually like one guy a year who has that kind of impact, you know, or one or two, like not a ton. Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. So like at Labor, like at the beginning of the year, like after that draft, like we were out like at a hotel, and Glenn Cole and Rick Wolf, Glenn. So Glenn, like they bought Torres for $1. And I bought Headley, and, you know, they kind of said to me, they took me aside, like, no offense, you know, but we think Torres is going to have the job at some point over Headley. I'm like, we'll see.
you just don't know. It's hard to tell. All right, last question here. Super deep league thoughts on outfield options like Scott Schebler, who I think should be owned in a deep league. Danny Valencia, my old friend. Tommy Pham. Now, I didn't bring this up just because it's Valencia. This question's from AJ Smith, and our miscellaneous guys like Kike Hernandez, Eric Sogard, Chet Pinder. They're not outfielders. Oh, middle infielders he wants to know about too. Well, all right. Out of those three, Pham, Schebler, Valencia, I think it's Schebler, but who would you pick out of that group?
I would take it has to be Schebler, right? Yeah. You know, Pham has looked good, but I don't know how you don't take Schebler. Like the power looks legitimate, and you know, of those players, Valencia is clearly at the bottom of those three to me.
Yeah,
you know, I know he's picked it up lately, but at this point, I don't have as much faith in him, you know, as I do in those other two guys.
Yeah, and the middle infielders, I'd probably take Hernandez, I think. Would be my guy. All right, that's it. We're done. We're going to take a quick break. Well, actually, let's just wrap up the show here.
This is a long show.
Yeah, well, we talked... I think we talked about a lot of cool topics, and we did it in a sort of more relaxed way than we normally would do if we had like a guest on, but I thought this worked really well. We should do this more often.
I know, you know, with Brett's here, I think when it's three people, it's a little more structured. With two people, it tends to be more of just a conversation.
Yeah, which I like, but you're right. When it's three people, you sort of have to be like a traffic cop and be like, all right, you talk now. All right, now you talk. Because otherwise, it's just three people talking over each other, which is not a great podcast. Not a great listening experience, I would assume. So, yeah. Well, good news is we're going to have Brett back next week, and we have a lot to talk about with Brett, right? It's been a minute since we've talked to him.
Yeah, Brett's been like super busy.
Yeah, which is like a good thing, but not for us because we don't get to talk to him. But we're gonna do. Well, he has some thoughts on the draft, which I mean, I think they're gonna talk about it on Tino this week. So I would definitely check that episode out. We're recording on Thursday night. That'll be out on Friday. Definitely check out Tino. We'll have Brett back next week. So just to wrap up here, make sure you head over to Baseball Prospectus and subscribe today with the one-year premium membership. If you get the super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service, which is fantastic because even if you're a seasoned veteran, we all text each other. We're like, hey, I got offered this trade. Like, what do you think? Like, everyone wants to have that second opinion. So that's basically what the Bat Signal is. It's kind of your go-to for just a resource to have to either get a fresh take or a different perspective. So I love the Bat Signal. Mike, it's one of the coolest things we do, right? The Bat Signal?
Yeah, it's whenever it was introduced, I was like, who would use this? But a lot of people do. And, you know, now I can see why. Like, it's... some of the questions that come in there are so detailed, and there's enough expertise on the staff that like everybody, you know, answers. Yeah, there's something for everybody. Like whether you're in like a roto league or a dynasty league or a redraft, there's somebody is going to be able to answer your question no matter what.
What's interesting to me is that every fantasy owner is different in terms of their process and their experiences and how they approach it from a strategic standpoint. So to just have a different perspective almost is that alone is valuable to me, just because someone might think about an issue or a problem differently than you, and that can really help you out. So that's what I like about having that resource. So definitely go over to BP and subscribe today. We would really appreciate it. That's the best way you can support us and all of our work. So subscribe to this show on iTunes, Stitcher, Radio app, whatever you use to listen to the podcast. Rate and review us. That would help us out tremendously. Follow Mike on Twitter. He's at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. Until our next show, thank you all for listening to Flags Fly Forever. And so long, everybody.
See you next week.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.